Welcome to the first edition of the Samwell News for 2026 for the blind and visually impaired community living in and around Samwell. And a very happy new year to all of you.
Sunrise and sunset for the third week of January. Sunrise will be at 8:05, sunset at 4:30. It will be a bit breezy with temperatures at around 3 degrees Celsius.
Some headlines from this week's readings from the Express and Star. Wednesday's news, end of the road for Albion boss. Teenager due in court after gun seized. Thursday, West Bromwich indoor market live music nights to beat the January blues. Friday, BBC presenter Nick Owen recovering from second cancer scare. West Brom, MP speaks in her support to ban ghost number plates. Warning against overuse of nasal sprays. Monday, 15-year-old arrested for causing driving accident. The day Bowie died and the year the world changed. Roads in parts of West Midlands rated green. Tuesday, new Albion manager bids farewell to Minnesota United. Sandwell congratulated on leading the way in pothole repairs.
All of those stories, of course, coming up courtesy of Express and Star newspapers. It does seem a long time since we were last with you. In fact, it's almost a month, so it is quite a long time. But I can tell you that we all needed the rest after presenting you with the Christmas special, which I know went down well with some listeners who've taken the trouble to get in touch with us. Well, the very cold snap has come and gone, at least for the time being, although when I went out this morning to collect my regular prescription, I found it was quite cold again, but at least it wasn't below freezing like it was last week. And it looks as if it will still be pretty cold again next week. We've all the usual features coming up, including radio and TV listings from Talking News Federation and one or two more items from them. Of course, we have a West Bromwich Albion report, and there's at least two items about the departure of the previous manager and a welcome to the new one who's come all the way from Minnesota in the USA. But I understand from a friend that football is quite professionally organised in the US, and he's a young guy, in fact around the same age as the departing manager. You'll hear all about that in what's coming up in the next 2.25 hours or so. We'll get on with the first day's news.
This is James Brodie bringing to you stories from the Express and Star dated the 7th of January. Woman involved in violent disorder loses bail bid before sentence. A woman found guilty of being involved in the violent disorder which led to the death of Father Matthew Adams failed in her bid for a late taste of freedom before being sentenced. Nicholas Stanley of 40 from Sandwell was found guilty of violent disorder after a 10-week trial at Wolverhampton Crown Court before Christmas. Her co-defendants, Mark Shorthouse, 55, Ryan Stanley, aged 30, John Wise, aged 42, and a 16-year-old boy, all of Sandwell, were found guilty of murdering Matthew Adams, aged 33. They converged on Matthew outside the Gough Arms pub at 1 a.m. on Sunday, March 19, 2023. The 33-year-old died 4 days later after being found unresponsive in his bedroom. After guilty verdicts were reached by the jury, they were all remanded in custody and will be sentenced on January the 30th by Justice Michael Chambers, KC. Stanley's legal team had tabled an application for bail which was refused at Wolverhampton Crown Court on Monday. Her new legal team from St Philip's Chambers, who were appointed after being found guilty, told the court Stanley's health is failing and she's not getting the medication she needs at Derbyshire Foster Hall Women's Prison. Away you go, record miserable run on the road spells the end for Albion boss. This story is brought to you by Lewis Cox. Albion owners Bilkel are hunting a third head coach in a year after Ryan Mason was axed following the worst run of away form in a century. Chairman Sheelan Patel made the decision to sack Mason in the wake of Monday night's last gasp 2-1 defeat at Leicester, a 10th away defeat in a row. Mason's position at the helm was left untenable after the poorest sequence of away results in 99 years and just one shy of the club record. The 34-year-old departs with his backroom staff Nigel Gibbs and Sam Poley after 27 games at the helm and leaves the Baggies in 18th place in the Championship, closer to the bottom three than the top six. Albion hope to name Mason's successor in time for the next league fixture, which is not until Friday week, January the 16th, at home to Middlesbrough. First team coach James Morrison has taken interim charge for the second time to oversee Swansea in the FA Cup on Sunday, after he held the role in the wake of Tony Mowbray's sacking last April. The Billcore board now turns to a huge decision, having overseen the brief and failed tenures of Mowbray and Mason. The former checked in as a stopgap after Albion was unable to tie up a deal with Raphael Wicki, the Swiss coach, who had initially been the top target. Wicki had remained out of work until he was appointed at MLS outfit Sporting Kansas City on Monday. It is understood Albion's owners were proactive in their succession planning during the difficult latter weeks of Mason's reign. At least one out-of-work boss was sounded out by the hierarchy at Billcore plotted the next steps forward should the Baggies boss be dismissed. One of those possible candidates of interest could be England's under-21 boss Lee Carlsley. The former Birmingham City midfielder had admirers amongst the Albion owners and was previously contacted over the role. Carlsley, 51, has been in charge of Young Lions since 2021 and is a double European Championship winner. Highly regarded young coach Eric Ramsey, 34, was close to the Albion post when Mason was appointed and is still working at Minnesota United. The Englishman from Shrewsbury is a former Chelsea and Manchester United coach and has been linked with the Strasbourg role in France after Liam Rosenaire's switch to Stamford Bridge. Albion midfielder Jason Lumey, one of the club's leadership group, faced the media after the late Fox's blow on Monday night. The Irishman claimed that he and his teammates felt embarrassed by the club's away form and apologised to supporters and said the results were the responsibility of players and not Mason. On the road has been absolutely dreadful, and as players we have to take responsibility because it is not being good enough for myself and the rest of the lads. Malumbi said that we just need to apologise first and foremost because for our club the run we're on has been pretty dreadful, and that's coming from us, the players. We need to take responsibility. The 26-year-old added that some of the games we've lost away from this home have just been embarrassing, and that's how we feel. Pretty embarrassed to represent this club and for the form that we're in. Health staff target of HMO bid at former police training centre. This story is brought to you by Christian Barnett. A former police training centre could be converted into houses of multiple occupation, that's HMO. A planning application has been submitted to Sandwell Council, which would see the empty West Midlands Police Training Centre Windmill House, Windmill Lane, Smethwick, turned into a 76-bed property. The three-storey building, which closed last year, dates from the 1970s and has been used by the region's police force as a training centre and accommodation. The planning application by Cameron Ahmed of Mason Limited said that the building had recently been used as accommodation with police trainee transported to and from the force's main Tallyho training centre in Edgbaston. The site's 47 car park spaces would be reduced to 23 bays as part of the work. Windmill House was sold to MNP Investment Holdings in June last year and is one of several West Midlands police properties deemed surplus to requirements. The planning application said that the proposed HMO at the Windmill House had been designed to support healthcare workers at the nearby Midlands Metropolitan University Hospital. The surrounding area has been primed for regeneration with plans including hundreds of new homes and a school. Smethwick and Albury police stations that were also put up for sale by West Midlands Police. A planning statement said that positioned just 500 metres from the Midland Metropolitan Hospital, the scheme is designed to directly support the local healthcare workers by providing affordable, flexible accommodation in an area identified for regeneration. Each bedroom is designed to include an ensuite shower room, pull-down bed with sofa integration, workspace and a built-in storage. Teen due in court after gun seized. West Midlands Police have charged a 17-year-old boy with weapon charges after they recovered a viable firearm and ammunition in Smethwick. The arrest came after police acted on information and seized the viable firearm in High Street, Smethwick on Sunday. The teenager was charged with possession of firearm, ammunition, possession of cannabis and one offence of assault. He was remanded to appear before Wolverhampton Youth Court on Monday. A force spokesperson said, "We've charged a teenager after recovering a gun and ammunition in Smethwick. We acted on information and seized the viable firearm in the High Street on Sunday. Following inquiries, we detained a 17-year-old boy in West Bromwich. The teenager has been charged with possession of a firearm and ammunition, having cannabis, and one offence of assault.
This is Alison, recording a selection of articles from the Express and Star dated Thursday, the 8th of January. Assault on staff during shop theft. A man was arrested and charged after an incident which saw staff at a supermarket assaulted. West Midlands Police said that Stephen Baker, 40, had been charged with shop theft and assault following the incident at a store on Brickhouse Lane in Tipton on Monday morning. Baker, of Aston, was set to appear at Wolverhampton Magistrates Court on Tuesday. No details are available of his appearance. A spokesman for West Midlands Police said a suspect was appearing in court after staff at a supermarket were assaulted. Stefan Baker, of Aston, has been charged with shop theft and assault. It comes after officers were called to a store on Brickhouse Lane, Tipton, at around 10:50 a.m. on January the 5th, to reports of alcohol being stolen and shop staff being assaulted. Baker, aged 40, was remanded in custody to appear at Wolverhampton Magistrates Court. Bid to smuggle drugs into jail. A Black Country man has been charged with several offences, including the possession of heroin and crack cocaine, after a contraband package was intercepted on its way into prison. Joshua Morris, of no fixed abode in Albury, was caught following a drone incursion at HMP Long Larton near Evesham, Worcestershire, on Sunday. He has now been charged with a number of offences and has been remanded to appear before magistrates tomorrow. Morris faces charges of possession of a Class A controlled drug, heroin, possession of a Class A controlled drug, crack cocaine, conveying a List A prohibited article into a prison and attempting to convey a List B prohibited article into a prison. The 32-year-old is due to appear at Worcester Magistrates Court tomorrow. Church supporters bid to save vessel of shared history and community identity. A petition has been set up to save a historic church described as a vessel of shared history and community identity. Supporters fear a proposal to sell its ring of eight bells will be the end of St Paul's Church, Wensbury, a Grade II listed building which has stood in Wood Green Road in the Mestycroft area since 1874. So far they have 87 signatures towards what they say is a crucial fight to keep St Paul's doors open. The petition can be signed at www.change.org/p/save-saint-paul-s-church-from-closure. The notice in front of the church appeared before Christmas and says the proposal to sell off the bells is prior to the proposed closure of the church building under the statutory closure process. If sold, the bells will go to the Keltec Trust, a charity which finds new homes for bells from churches which have closed, mainly in the UK, but also exporting them to Australia and the USA. St Paul's hasn't been used for around 2 years, but has teamed up with nearby St Luke's. The Express and Star recently reported how the fortunes of a third church, St Bartholomew's, had been turned around partly because of a collaboration with St Luke's. Louise Sheard, who started the petition against any potential closure, said it had been a cornerstone of her family's life for generations and is a vessel of our shared history and community identity. She said, "The sale and subsequent closure would be a devastating blow, not only to those of us with personal ties, but to all residents of the parish and Greater Wensbury. The loss of St Paul's would erase a piece of our community's identity and heritage. The impact of its closure extends beyond sentimental value. Churches like St Paul's offer invaluable community support beyond services. We understand tough financial decisions have to be made, but selling the heritage that binds our community isn't the only route. We urge the decision makers to consider alternative solutions to preserve this vital landmark. Oliver Beedale, who lives close to St Paul's, said, "It is very disappointing and disheartening to read that St Paul's bells are to be sold and the building to close for myself and fellow local residents. There seems to be a good catchment area close to it, and we have seen what happened with St Bartholomew's, which was also struggling but seems to have risen again. So I would urge people to sign the petition and get behind St Paul's." Aaron Kataria, Director of Communications for Lichfield Diocese, said, "There is a legal process in place for the disposal of the bells at St Paul's, which would see them put to good use in another church, and we would welcome people's views. The formal legal process for the closure of the church has not yet begun, but the priest and parochial church council have expressed the wish, with great sadness, that the church is closed as it is no longer needed for public worship." Indoor Market Music Nights to Beat the Blues. A renowned indoor market is launching a live music night, and the free attraction is all set to beat the January blues. Henry's Blues House is launching the free nights of entertainment at West Bromwich Indoor Market. Events will be held every Friday, starting on January the 16th, with Rich Dickinson's driving force lined up for the official launch. The live blues music will play from 7 to 10pm and stall holders will stay open until 9pm to offer street food, cocktails and other drinks. The roots of Henry's Blues House stretch back to 1968 when Jim Simpson of Big Bear Music opened it at the Crown Pub on Station Street in Birmingham city centre. The legendary venue's most famous early band was Earth, whose members Ozzy Osbourne, Tony Iommi, Geezer Edwards and Bill Ward went on to form Black Sabbath, initially managed by Mr. Simpson. The club, which also once featured the likes of Jethro Tull, Status Quo and Thin Lizzy, already runs live gigs every Tuesday at Snob's Bar on the city's Broad Street. West Bromwich Indoor Market launched last August on High Street, replacing one in King Square. It is one of the centrepieces of Sandwell Council's West Bromwich Master Plan, created to deliver a modern and vibrant destination for both traders and shoppers. Councillor Peter Hughes, Sandwell Council's Cabinet Member for Regeneration and Infrastructure, said, "We were really proud to open the new West Bromwich Indoor Market in 2025 and to welcome many thousands of visitors eager to discover the fantastic range of stalls and items on offer. Supporting businesses big and small is a key part of this, and we're excited to have these music events with Henry's Blues House coming soon on Friday evenings." Mr. Simpson said, "We're thrilled to be extending Henry's to the Black Country and look forward to seeing music fans join us every Friday. A big thanks to Sandwell Council for forming this new partnership with us to bring regular live blues to West Bromwich High Street. We already have a great lineup of bands for January and February, and will soon have bookings stretching into the spring and beyond. Bands appearing in January and February are January 16th, Rich Dickinson's Driving Force; January the 23rd, Jamie Thayer and the Worried Men; January the 30th, Slide Boy Roy; February the 6th, The Shuffle Pack; February the 13th, Honey Boy Hickling Blues Band; February the 20th, The Shakedown Brothers; February the 27th, Chicken Bone Blue Band. For full listings of Henry's Blues House gigs and to sign up to a weekly Henry's Blues letter, visit www.bigbearmusic.com/HBHouse/. Need for affordable homes identified. A developer working on a new Black Country affordable housing scheme said there was an urgent need for new homes in the area. West Midlands Mayor Richard Parker has announced funding for 34 two- and three-bedroom homes to be made available for discounted rents or through a rent-to-buy scheme. The £7.4 million development in Wensbury is being built by Keon Homes for Housing Association Citizen, with £450,000 coming from the West Midlands Combined Authority to cover the cost of cleaning up the brownfield site. It is also part-funded by Homes England. It is the third time that Keon Homes and Citizen have joined forces on an affordable housing project in the West Midlands. Work on the 34-home Friar Park Road scheme is underway and due to be completed by late 2026. Matt Beckley, Head of Partnerships at Keon Homes, said, "We are a builder that is committed to Brownfield first. Wensbury is in urgent need of more affordable homes, and Friar Park will certainly deliver that." Mr. Parker said, "This is yet another example of how we are transforming underused or derelict sites into vibrant new places where people can afford to live and raise families. It's part of my commitment to build affordable homes at a time when too many people are struggling to secure the safe, warm home they need to get ahead in life."
This is Lauren with some stories from the Express and Star from the 9th of January. Two men arrested and drugs seized following pursuit. Two men were arrested and a quantity of drugs seized after a high-speed pursuit by police through Tipton. Officers from West Midlands Police pursued the car after it failed to stop, with the car running red lights at speed before it was stopped on New Road. A search of the car revealed Class A and B drugs and that it had been linked to the theft of another vehicle in Halesowen in December, and saw two men, a 20-year-old man from West Bromwich and a 25-year-old man from Birmingham, arrested on suspicion of drug and theft offences. A spokesman for West Midlands Police said, "Two men have been arrested after a car failed to stop for police during a pursuit in Tipton. The car was speeding, being driven dangerously through red traffic lights, before it came to a stop on New Road, Tipton, in the early hours of this morning. A 20-year-old man from West Bromwich was arrested on suspicion of theft of a motor vehicle, failing to stop, dangerous driving, possession of Class A and Class B drugs, and driving whilst under the influence of drugs. A 25-year-old man from Birmingham was arrested on suspicion of theft of a motor vehicle and possession of Class A and Class B drugs." BBC star Nick Owen is recovering from a second cancer scare. Written by James Vukmirovich. BBC Midlands Today TV presenter Nick Owen has undergone surgery for kidney cancer, his second cancer battle in little over 2 years after battling prostate cancer. He is recovering at his home in Kimver after undergoing an operation before Christmas at Russell's Hall Hospital in Dudley. "It has been a difficult time for the legend of broadcasting, but he said he was grateful to be on the other side of the battle." He said, "I am so relieved to have come through the operation after a traumatic time, especially after what my wife Vicky and our family went through when I had prostate cancer. It's been tough, but things are picking up now. The NHS has been absolutely brilliant, from my GP who was so thorough in getting me a diagnosis, to all the medics at Russell's Hall Hospital. I am forever grateful to them." In 2023, Nick was diagnosed with prostate cancer, before making a full recovery and returning to presenting BBC Midlands Today later that year. He spoke openly about his prostate cancer diagnosis on television to encourage men to get tested and support others. And, after sharing his story, charities saw a surge in test inquiries, and many viewers even got in touch with him, thanking him for saving their lives. The 78-year-old, who attended Shrewsbury School as a youngster, has been broadcasting for more than 50 years. He was a pioneer of breakfast television, appearing on the very first Good Morning Britain in 1983, before forming one of the nation's favourite TV partnerships with Anne Diamond on ITV, and then for Good Morning with Anne and Nick on BBC One. He also anchored broadcasts for the Olympics and World Cup over the years and was awarded an MBE for his services to broadcasting in 2024. Speaking after his prostate cancer diagnosis, Owen said it was fantastic that all this awareness has come forward now. He also spoke of the experiences of high-profile people such as six-time Olympic cycling champion Sir Chris Hoy, TV sports presenter Steve Ryder, and actor Stephen Fry. He added there were scores of people who said they had visited a GP as a direct result of seeing him, and all the high-profile people we've mentioned discussed the disease, saying it was vital to be as open as possible in order to help others. But whilst the presenter of news programme BBC Midlands Today said it was fantastic there was greater awareness, it was just slightly chilling to know prostate cancer is now the most common amongst men. Men were getting prostate cancer before, he explained, but we just didn't know about it. Owen is expected to spend an extended time recovering at his home in the South Staffordshire village of Kinver, but it is hoped he will be on our screens again once he is fit. Kay Wright, head of the BBC in the Midlands, says everyone wishes him well, adding, "We are so proud of Nick. He is an outstanding broadcaster with a heart of gold. His BBC colleagues and his devoted Midlands Today viewers have missed him dearly over recent weeks, and we are wishing him all the best in his recovery. The red sofa will be here waiting for him when he's ready." Alongside this article is a picture of Nick Owen. He is stood in the BBC studio, so behind him are the famous red sofas, a broadcasting camera, and the background of a bird's eye view of London. He is stood smiling, beaming, as a matter of fact. He is wearing a grey-blue suit jacket, a white shirt, and a grey and light blue striped tie. And he is smiling at the camera. These ghost plates stop our police catching car racers. MP explains why new laws are essential to allow ANPR cameras to do their job. Written by Sarah Coombs, West Bromwich MP. It all started last January on Kenrick Way, a long straight road in West Bromwich that's a hotspot for car racers. When I asked the police officer why we couldn't get a speed camera, he told me it would be no use. "All the racers have got ghost plates," he said. "They won't be caught." And this was the first time I had ever heard about ghost plates. They are number plates that are unreadable to the automatic number plate recognition, ANPR, cameras that are used to police our roads and keep us safe. Criminals use these plates to carry out crimes undetected, but also many drivers are using them to speed and jump red lights with immunity. And there's a financial cost to this as well. Too many crashes that happen on our roads involve a car that can't be traced. This is leading to higher insurance premiums for all of us, as we foot the bill for the selfish behaviour of other drivers who don't want to play by the rules. There is no good reason to have a ghost plate. Now, a year on, the government has been listening. After months of campaigning in Parliament for harsher penalties if a driver is caught with a ghost plate, the government is going to crack down on illegal number plates. They have announced today that drivers will face penalty points and have their vehicles seized if they use a ghost plate. They will also bring in rules that address the sale and supply of dodgy plates too. One of the Labour Party's promises at the last general election was to take back our streets in order to keep us safe. And this is exactly what this new strategy does. To crack down on the racers and drunk and uninsured drivers who put the rest of us at risk. Everyone in the Black Country knows that dangerous driving possesses a huge risk to our area. Whether it's the noise, the pollution, or the feeling that you're not safe when you go about your day. And that's exactly why I have been standing up for these changes and pushing the government to act. I want people to feel like they can drop their kids off at school safely, drive to work without feeling under threat, and go about their day. I'm delighted to see this campaign get the attention it's deserved, and that the government has acted. Alongside this article is an image of Sarah Coombs MP, who wrote this article. She is stood in what seems to be an office, with a plant in the background and a blue sofa in the background. She is wearing a green cardigan and black skinny jeans. She has brown curly hair, and she is holding a sign that says, "I support a crackdown on ghost plates." Overuse of nasal sprays can block you all up even more. Be aware, rebound congestion if you squirt to relieve stuffiness caused by colds. Written by Storm Newton, health correspondent. People with blocked noses have been urged to only use nasal decongestion sprays for 7 days or face making their symptoms worse. It comes as a poll found almost 6 in 10 pharmacists said patients are unaware of the risks of using sprays for too long. Decongestion sprays provide short-term relief from stuffiness caused by colds, allergies, and sinusitis. However, using them for longer than a week can cause so-called rebound congestion, the Royal Pharmaceutical Society, RPS, has warned. This preventable condition, also known as rhinitis medicamentosa, causes symptoms to worsen, with patients becoming dependent on sprays to breathe more easily. An RPS survey of 300 pharmacists found 59% think that the public is not aware of this risk, whilst almost 3/4 said packaging should be clearer about the 7-day limit. Almost 2/3 said they had intervened in cases of suspected overuse. Professor Amira Gurujiz, chief scientist at the RPS, said, "Nasal decongestion sprays can be helpful for short-term relief, but using them for longer than 7 days can make your congestion significantly worse. Our research shows that many people are unaware of this risk, which means they may continue using these sprays without realising they could be prolonging their symptoms. We'd like to see clearer warnings on the packaging, which you can't miss, and greater awareness of the 7-day limit. If your congestion lasts more than a week, speak to your pharmacist. There are safe and effective alternative options to help you manage your symptoms." The RPS urged patients to always follow the instructions on the packaging of nasal sprays and to seek advice from pharmacists if congestion continues.
Hello, this is Sarbjit with your news from the Express and Star, dated Saturday the 10th of January. Mark Andrews. Mark Andrews takes a wry look at the week that was. This week, West Midlands Police posted a photo of a man they wanted to speak to in connection with 3 shoplifting offences, stealing goods worth more than £200. My first reaction was, about time too. How refreshing to see coppers going after the real criminals, rather than scouring Twitter for politically incorrect jokes, finger-wagging about non-crime hate incidents. But it appears I may be in a minority. What followed the appeal was not an offer of useful information, but a social media pile-on from people angry that police were pursuing him at all. Hundreds of comments, almost entirely critical of the police for actually doing their job, and offers from the public to pay his fine. Leave him alone. Fair play to him. I'm sure Tesco won't go bankrupt. Our corrupt politicians are stealing a living at our expense, were typical reactions. The general consensus seemed to be that he was a bit of a lovable rogue, a latter-day Robin Hood, while the police were acting like the Sheriff of Nottingham. If anyone was the villain, it was Tesco for charging him too much for its groceries. I know social media isn't the real world, but doesn't all this say something rather dark about where society is heading? That stealing is okay, as long as it is the right kind of stealing, like from one of those horrible big companies that actually makes a profit and provides jobs for people silly enough to work for a living. This is wrong on all counts. First of all, people who steal from Tesco steal from all of us. Bosses don't cover the losses out of their own largesse. They put it on the price of the groceries we all buy. Secondly, millions of us probably hold an indirect stake in Tesco through our pension funds, so the thieves are stealing our retirement too. But most of all, there is the impact shoplifting has on the people who work in shops. A couple of years ago, I interviewed a shop worker about this very matter, and she told me how she would often go home and cry after spending a day being taunted by self-satisfied thieves who would smirk at her while they went about their business, secure in the knowledge that the police would do nothing whatsoever. What I would really love to know is what proportion of the people who think stealing £200 is such a jolly jape are also working themselves into a lather about the legality of Donald Trump's actions in Venezuela. Deep breaths for better well-being. There is a picture of Chris Titley and Alex Ashcroft pictured at St. Mary's Catholic Primary Academy. Chris Titley and Alex Ashcroft are both qualified breathwork coaches. Breathing seems like something we do unconsciously, but paying attention to how we breathe can have many benefits. Chris Titley and Alex Ashcroft, who are based in Sedgley, are both qualified breathwork coaches and run Tender Breathwork. Breathwork is conscious, controlled breathing, so it's breathing in specific ways with an awareness, explains Chris. Predominantly, you should breathe through your nose into your belly, but there's lots of different techniques to do that, such as different amounts of inhales for a certain duration, exhales for a certain duration, and actually holding your breath as well, he says. Conscious breathing is said to help lower blood pressure, reduce inflammation, increase energy and stamina, aid digestion, improve circulation, and strengthen the lungs. Breathwork helps to increase the body's oxygen levels, which can have calming effects, says Chris. Breathwork is quite new in the UK. We're so far behind other places in the world. For example, Australia is 10 years ahead of us in terms of recognising how using conscious, controlled breathing can affect your autonomic nervous system. They are using this science and these techniques in the curriculum for school students to help with their learning and to help with their stress and anxiety, he adds. Chris has been a coach, mentor and teacher for 20 years and started by working with young adults who had additional needs and difficulties in secondary schools and pupil referral units. Over the last 10 years, he has increasingly worked with young people in their late teens and adults suffering with physical and emotional issues, including anxiety and depression, helping people transition into careers, apprenticeships, and higher education. Around 7 years ago, Chris began practicing breath work to reduce his own anxiety and to improve his sleep. I went through a difficult period where I could not sleep. I heard that meditation is good for your emotional well-being, so I started looking into that, he explains. And the gateway to meditation is actually breathing and consciously controlling that intake of oxygen that goes into your body. Breathwork helped immensely. It helped me to sleep and it helped me with the anxiety and stress that I was going through at the time. After experiencing firsthand the difference it made to his own well-being, Chris decided he wanted to help others to reap the benefits of the techniques and now uses breathwork during his work as a coach and mentor. In my job at the moment, I work with people that have lots of different barriers and are in difficult situations, and I help them overcome those barriers and difficult situations, particularly stress and anxiety, when going for job interviews, says Chris. Working with people and giving them these techniques and seeing someone who is a bag of nerves and being able to change that around through being able to educate them on simple ways of consciously oxygenating their body and to breathe is incredible, he adds. There are techniques that Tender Breathwork teaches to help people in real-life situations, that real-life stress response. Breathwork isn't about lying down in a comfortable place with candles and nice music. It's about tackling real day-to-day issues and real day-to-day stresses that we encounter. There are techniques to breathe in a way that nobody would even tell that you are executing these techniques, for example, if you're in a large crowd or attending a job interview, or somebody is getting irate and shouting at you. Together with Alex, Chris wants to help school children benefit from the techniques so they can continue to use them later in life. Alex is training with an organisation that specialises in breathwork for primary school aged children, and the pair will be running an after-school club in the spring. Breathwork helps children by improving concentration, managing stress, and promoting emotional regulation, says Chris. It teaches them techniques to calm their bodies, which makes it easier to focus on learning, handle academic pressure, and regulate their emotions in the classroom and at home. We are running an after-school breathwork club for children attending St. Mary's Catholic Primary Academy in the spring term. We also have programs for secondary school age children, specifically for exam and academic anxiety with relation to upcoming GCSEs or A-level exams. We teach the science behind breathwork and also practical exercises that can be used time and time again to help children and young people manage their emotions and calm their bodies in real time. Breathwork isn't just for children and teens, though. It's for everyone. Working with the younger ages allows us to empower people so that they can take the science, theory and practical forward into their adult lives and promote better emotional, mental and physical well-being within. Tender Breathwork also offers one-to-one, group sessions and courses for adults. Everybody can benefit from the knowledge and science. Everything we teach is backed up by science, so the theory comes first and then the practical, because I find that people can invest more in the practical when they understand the theory and science behind it. For more information, visit tender-breathwork.co.uk. This article was by Heather Large. Plans for £20 million primary school and 190 new homes take a step forward. A plan to build a new £20 million school in Albury is set to move forward. Sandwell Council is looking to build a new Causeway Green primary school as part of the huge new Brandhall Village in Albury, which includes 190 new homes and a 67-acre public park. The proposed new 420-pupil net zero school, which would be built on the former Brandhall golf course, would replace the existing and structurally failing Causeway Green primary in nearby Penn Cricket Lane. Sandwell Council's Cabinet meets on January 14 and will be asked to approve spending more than £20 million on the new school. Sandwell Council said the existing Causeway Green primary school was in extremely poor condition and regularly flooded. The 70-year-old Albury School is in the worst condition within the maintained school estate and beyond its economic life, due to the corrosion of steel frames, the council said, and its structural integrity was failing. The new school would be built on the former golf course near the corner of Grafton Road and Ferndale Road. The latest plans say work would start on the new school this autumn and would be finished by early 2028. A cabinet report from November 2024 detailing funding for Brandhall Village said the new school was expected to open in early 2027. Sandwell Council said building a new school on a different site would be the most cost-effective solution. the local authority ruled out building a new school on the existing site, saying it would cost up to a further £5 million. Building a new school to a greener passive house standard would cost £1 million more than a traditional design, the council said, but the associated lower running costs would eventually save the authority money. The council said the school had been designed with passive house principles, which includes using insulation, windows and ventilation to hugely reduce the building's energy demands and carbon footprint. The local authority originally looked to build 550 homes on the former Brandhall golf course, but slashed its plans by two-thirds after a backlash from campaigners. A planning application to build 190 homes on the land was approved in 2023, despite receiving more than 200 objections, including those from the Brandhall Green Space Action Group, which was formed to fight off the threat of building on the land. Five things we love this week. Number one, a 31-year-old willow weaving basket maker in the west of Ireland says he feels a responsibility to keep aspects of the ancient tradition alive. Tom Delaney, who runs Old Crafty, says basket making was his first love, and he is delighted to now be selling his handmade work from a small home in Mayo all over the world. He started weaving when he was 26 and has been in business for 4 years. My grandfather and great-grandfather made baskets, and it wasn't like it was a family business or anything, but my dad kept it alive just by talking about it. That's how I got the interest originally. The former archaeologist said evidence of the use of weaving techniques date back to ancient societies. Number two, a historic textile mill which produces tweed for international fashion brands such as Chanel has recreated Victorian designs for the 200th anniversary of fabric. Lavat Mill in Howick, Scottish Borders was saved in 1999 by two entrepreneurs who were working for another tweed producer. It has since produced cloth for Madonna, The King and Taylor Swift. And to celebrate the 200th anniversary of the weaving technique, it has revealed 17 designs, inspired by archives in 19th century notebooks found in the attic, which will be released to fashion brands. Tweed was created in the Scottish Borders in 1826 after a misreading from a London tradesman of its previous name, Tweel. Number three. A near-complete battle trumpet is among a hoard of Iron Age objects discovered in Norfolk. The musical instrument, called a carnix, was among the items found during a routine archaeological excavation as part of the standard planning process for residential properties, Historic England said. These animal-headed bronze instruments were used by Celtic tribes across Europe to inspire their warriors in battle and fascinated the Romans, who frequently depicted them as war trophies. This newly excavated example is one of only three known from Britain and is one of the most complete found in Europe, Historic England said. The excavation was carried out on privately owned land in West Norfolk in summer 2025. The hoard also includes a sheet bronze boar's head, five shield bosses, and an iron object of unknown origin. Number four. Royal Mail is releasing a set of Stranger Things stamps in celebration of the Netflix show's finale. The Sci-Fi series, which sees a group of children from the fictional town of Hawkins battle against an evil force that threatens to destroy their world, dropped its final episode on New Year's Day in the UK. Millie Bobby Brown, one of the series' breakout stars, who plays a psychokinetic girl named Eleven, appears across two of the 14 stamps included in the new collection, which depicts a range of characters from across all five series. The illustrations were created by artist Kyle Lambert, who designed the posters for each season of Stranger Things. The collection comprises two sheets containing five stamps each and a miniature sheet of four stamps, which shows the four main friends, Lucas, Will, Mike and Dustin, riding their bikes. Number 5. Five Dartmoor ponies have arrived at a National Trust estate where they will help restore the landscape by grazing on thistles and other vigorous plants. The conservation charity hopes that the three mares and two geldings will help create the right conditions for wildflowers and grasses to thrive beneath scattered trees at the Wimpole Estate in Cambridgeshire. Workers have planted thousands of trees across areas of former non-productive arable land to re-establish traditional parkland habitats over the last 5 years. The ponies will graze across four interlinked fields of newly created wood pasture. Dave Hassel, farm and countryside manager at Wimpole Estate, said, "They're hardy, gentle grazers, ideal for this kind of habitat work."
Hello, this is Jenny. Happy New Year to you all. The following articles are from the Express and Star newspaper, dated Monday the 12th of January 2026. Boy 15 arrested for taking to wheel and causing an accident. Police arrested a 15-year-old boy who is suspected of driving a car that caused an accident. Emergency vehicles, including two marked police cars on blue lights, unmarked police cars and an ambulance, were sent to a pedestrian crossing on the southbound Birmingham Road, Great Bar. Traffic was stopped as eyewitnesses reported seeing officers making an arrest at the scene. It later emerged that the suspect was a teenager who was driving 2 years under the legal driving limit. The drama yesterday morning led to congestion in all directions, including the southbound road back up to the M6 Junction 7. A West Midlands police spokesman said, "We arrested a teenager after a vehicle failed to stop. The Audi hit a second vehicle, a Fiesta. The driver of the Fiesta, a man in his 50s, sustained minor injuries and was taken to hospital for treatment. A 15-year-old boy was arrested on suspicion of dangerous driving and attempted theft of a motor vehicle. The day Bowie died in the year the world changed. How David Bowie's death marked the end of an era. It still feels like a glitch in the simulation, a mistake in the broadcast. The weekend marked 10 years since the news filtered through that David Bowie, the man who seemed to exist outside time and identity, was gone. It seemed impossible, not just because of who Bowie was, but because we had only just celebrated his 69th birthday 2 days earlier. He had just released Black Star, a jazz-infused cryptic final transmission that we were still busy decoding when the signal cut out. In January 2016, the grief was immediate and visceral. Brixton became a shrine. Face paint was applied by tearful fans from Berlin to New York. But looking back from the vantage point of 2026, what stands out is the sheer elegance of the exit. In an era of leaks and relentless social media updates, Bowie managed to pull off the greatest magic trick of his career, dying entirely on his own terms, turning his death into a piece of performance art. Lazarus wasn't just a song, it was a goodbye letter we didn't realise we were reading until the author had left the room. A decade without him has only solidified the status of the ultimate cultural shapeshifter. We see his DNA everywhere now, You see it in the gender-fluid fashion that dominates the high street. You hear it in the genre-mashing sounds of modern pop. You feel it in the way artists now curate their eras, desperately trying to emulate what the chameleon who did it effortlessly. But no one has quite managed to fill the void. The starman left the building and he took the blueprint with him. Crucially, Bowie's passing felt like a grim starter for Ten, the opening act of a year that became infamous for its casualty list. 2016 didn't just take Bowie. It seemed to target the architects of our childhoods. It was the year of the 20th century truly beginning to fade, taking with it the voices, the faces, and the wit that had defined British culture for decades. There were seismic shifts in the world of politics too. It was the year the UK voted to leave the European Union. Across the pond, Americans selected Trump as their next president. But 10 years on, the sadness has mellowed. We don't just mourn the man who fell to earth anymore. We celebrate that he stuck around as long as he did. We still play the records, we wear the lightning bolts. And every January, we look up, half expecting to see a tin can floating far above the world, knowing that while the signal has stopped, the music is still travelling. In a nutshell, David Bowie's passing in January 2016 felt like a line being drawn. 10 years later, his legacy stands taller than ever, while the space he left remains unfilled. Attacker stabbed his lifelong friend during confrontation. Brothers are sentenced after victim stabbed in neck during altercation at pub. A man confronted and then stabbed a lifelong friend in the neck inside a packed Black Country pub. Daljit Badur, 46, from Winston Green, pleaded guilty to wounding and possession of a knife during the disorder, which happened inside the Royal Castle Bar and Restaurant in West Bromwich on July the 20th last year. His brother, Harvinder Badur, 48, pleaded guilty to a fray relating to him hurling a glass at another man which missed. Judge Jonathan Gosling told Wolverhampton Crown Court that the argument and part of the attack that followed was captured on CCTV at the Sam's Lane premises. The stabbing victim was taken to hospital and received stitches. Sentencing them, Judge Gosling said, "The brothers have to be dealt with for different levels of involvement in a serious piece of violence on July the 20th. Both were remanded in custody since their arrests. It is clear that the defendants and the victims have known each other all their lives. Daljit can be seen removing a lock knife and using it. He lunges, stabbing the victim in the neck. The victim suffers a gaping wound of about 2 inches. Daljit then punches and kicks the victim." The judge said he disagreed with the prosecution's claim that it was a highly dangerous weapon and that the assault was premeditated. The defendant appears to have the weapon on him not as a weapon, but produces it in the heat of the moment, he said. They both lay into the victims, but in different ways. The judge said a concurrent sentence will be required. The incident was short-lived. I have no doubt the defendant was remorseful and no doubt he was worried about his health. The wound was not deep and fortunately had no long-lasting effect for the victim. The court heard the victims, who were related to each other, noticed the Badurs staring at them in the lead-up to the incident before they were approached and sworn at by the defendants. In an attempt to defuse the situation, one of the victims left the bar, but was followed to the toilet area where he was attacked. Daljit Badur, who has convictions dating to 1992 and 2016, was jailed for wounding for 15 months, was arrested a short time later at the business The Angels Club in High Street. Harvinder Badur was arrested months later in October when officers found him hiding in a bathroom cavity wall. In mitigation, Dr. Bobby Singh said Daljit Badur used the knife to open goods boxes at his own business and had since apologised to his friends and family for his behaviour, blaming a cancer scare, stress and marriage breakup for his actions. Daljit Badur of Magdala Street, Winston Green, was initially also charged with an attempted murder, but this was not proceeded with. For admitting wounding, he was jailed for 3 years. For possession of the knife, he was jailed for 18 months to run concurrently, minus time already spent in custody. Harvinder Badar of Holly Lane, Smethwick, was jailed for 6 months for admitting a fray, but was immediately released due to time already served on remand. Roads in parts of West Midlands are rated green in new pothole traffic light system. Roads in the West Midlands have among the fewest potholes in the country, according to a new traffic light system. Drivers will be able to see how well their local authority is tackling potholes with the launch of the new rating system. The Department for Transport, DFT, said a new mapping tool shows all of England's 154 local highway regions rated as red, amber or green, based on road conditions and how effectively they are spending the government's road maintenance funding. Green authorities include Sandwell and Worcestershire in the West Midlands, along with Coventry, who sit alongside the likes of Essex, Wiltshire, Leeds, West Yorkshire, Darlington and County Durham. The vast majority of authorities are rated amber, including all other Black Country boroughs, Shropshire, Telford and Wrekin, Staffordshire and Powys. Among those classified as red are Cumberland, Cumbria, Bolton, Greater Manchester, Leicestershire, Suffolk and Kensington and Chelsea. The DFT said red authorities will receive dedicated support to bring them into line with best practices through a £300,000 programme. They demonstrated they are following best practice, such as investing in a long-term preventative measure rather than just patching up potholes, which also maintaining good while also maintaining good road conditions, according to the DFT. Total local road maintenance funding for England provided by the government in the 2025/26 financial year was nearly £1.6 billion, representing a £500 million uplift compared with the previous 12 months. A quarter of the extra money was withheld until the end of last year, after authorities had set out their plans to spend it. In November's budget, the government committed to providing a total of £7.3 billion for local road maintenance funding for the 4 years up to and including 2029/30. Common vehicle problems caused by potholes include damaged shock absorbers, broken suspension springs and distorted wheels. The RAC estimates a typical repair bill for a family car suffering pothole damage beyond a puncture is £590. Transport Secretary Heidi Alexander said, "For too long drivers have paid the price because our roads were left to deteriorate. I have heard time and again their frustrations on footing the bill because they hit a pothole, money they should never have to spend in the first place. We've put our money where our mouth is, increasing the funding for local highway authorities with £7.3 billion to fix roads and given them the long-term certainties they have been asking for." Why does joint pain get worse in winter? Advice on preventing and managing aches in colder weather. An article by Camilla Foster. As the chilly weather sets in, you might start to notice a familiar ache creeping into your joints. But is this seasonal discomfort just a coincidence? Here are some common reasons behind those winter aches and some expert tips on how to prevent them and manage them. Most common areas to get joint pains in the winter. All joints can be affected, but it can be particularly noticeable in joints with complex bone structures furthest away from our core body, with hands and feet being particularly susceptible to these pains, says John Taberner, Community Rehabilitation Implementation Specialist at Nuffield Health. If you have damaged or worn joints, you will likely see an increase in pains with these joints in the cold weather. Factors that can contribute to joint pain in the winter. Reduced activity. People are generally less active in the winter months because it's colder outside, so they might be doing less walking, less exercise outside, and might even go to the gym less because of the barrier of it being cold to get there, says London-based physiotherapist Ben Lombard. This reduced activity can lead to reduced lubrication and muscle weakness, which can cause joint pain. Joints are surrounded by something called synovial membrane, and synovial fluid is produced by that membrane. The job of the synovial fluid is to lubricate the joints, and when you do less movement and when it is generally colder, the synovial fluid will be less fluid and more thick. The drop in barometric pressure. In winter, the barometric pressure often drops and can cause muscle and tendons to create more pressure on the joints, leading to joint pain, explains Lombard. Decreased blood circulation. As the weather gets colder, our body pulls blood away from our extremities to protect our vital organs and keep them warm, explains Tabernier. This results in less blood flow to our joints, and less blood flow can lead to poorer lubrication around the joints and therefore more pain. Who is more likely to be affected by joint pain in winter? There are multiple factors at play which can cause joint pain in the winter, and it can affect any age, but it's more likely to affect people as they get older, says Tabernier. As we age, our joints naturally begin to wear down, and this wear and tear can be primary reason for the additional pain and or stiffness. Wear and tear will likely be more common in those that have a long history of manual labour or high impact activities that put pressure on the joints. Additionally, conditions such as obesity, diabetes, heart disease and high blood pressure can increase the likelihood of having joint conditions and therefore joint pains. Preventing and managing joint pain. Take painkillers when needed. Intervention such as painkillers will help reduce the pain there and then, but it won't provide long-term relief to the overarching issues, says Tabernier. Painkillers mask but don't solve pain. They should be taken as and when needed, but you should focus on preventative methods. Layer up. Make sure that you're wrapping up warm, advises Lombard. Wearing thermals and layers can be quite useful. Use heat packs. I would recommend things like hot water bottles or even heat packs just to increase the blood flow and lubrication, recommends Lombard. Move your body. Moving will stimulate the release of the synovial fluid into the joints, which helps alleviate stiffness, says Tabernier. It also increases blood flow to the joints you are moving and helps warm your whole body up, which can help to decrease pain. Stay hydrated. Synovial fluids are influenced by the hydration in your body, so hydration generally would help keep things more mobile and flexible, says Lombard. Contact a professional. Always contact a medical professional if the pain is new or noticeably more severe, if the joint becomes red, swollen or hot to the touch, or if the pain and or stiffness doesn't improve once you begin to move, highlights Tabernier.
Welcome back to the Express and Star Pub Quiz. And this week we have five rounds. Question 1. News. Name the storm that brought heavy snow to the UK last week. Question 2. Which high street chain, known for its piercings, has been put into administration? Round 2. Sports. Question 3. Rory McIlroy won his first major golf title at which tournament in 2011? Question 4. Name the most successful country in Africa Cup of Nations history. Round 3. What year? Question 5. Rupert Murdoch was permitted to buy the Times and Sunday Times. Actor Elijah Wood was born. John Lennon's Imagine went to number one in the UK after the singer's death. Roger Moore starred in Bond thriller For Your Eyes Only. But what year? Question 6. Sharon Stone and Michael Douglas starred in Basic Instinct. Erasure hit the top of the singles chart with Arabesque. Prince Andrew and Sarah Ferguson separated. Andrew Morton's book Diana, Her True Story, caused controversy. But what year? Round 4. Who am I? Question 7. A model. I was born in Sudan in 1977. I was raised in a small village and my name allegedly means black spotted cow in my native tongue. I was granted asylum in Britain and was spotted in 1995 by a London modelling agency. I have modelled for a range of fashion houses and I won the 1997 MTV Model of the Year Award. Question 8. An author. I was born in Dorset in 1931. I taught briefly at Eton, but my work for MI5 and MI6 provided the subject matter for most of my novels, which document the post-World War II Cold War climate. These include Call for the Dead and Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy. And round 5. Maths. Impossible puzzles. Question 9. In an election, O'Hara and Keaton got 859 votes between them. Lavers and O'Hara got 755 together, whereas Keaton and Lavers got 650 between them. How many votes did each of the three get? And question 10. The serial number of my new computer looks quite an ordinary five-figure number to me, except its first and last digits are the same, said Dad. There's more than that, Dad, Mark told him. It's just three more than twice the square of its other three digits. That did make it rather special. So what was the number? Which was your favourite round? Click to the answers to find out. Here are the answers for the quiz. Question 1. News. Name the storm that brought heavy snow to the UK last week. Storm Gretty. Question 2. Which high street chain, known for its piercings, has been put into administration? Claire's Accessories. Round 2. Sports. Question 3. Rory McIlroy won his first major golf title at which tournament in 2011? The US Open. Question 4. Name the most successful country in Africa Cup of Nations history. Egypt. Round 3. What year? Question 5. Rupert Murdoch was permitted to buy The Times and Sunday Times. Actor Elijah Wood was born. John Lennon's Imagine went to number one in the UK after the singer's death. Roger Moore starred in Bond thriller For Your Eyes Only. But what year? 1981. Question 6. Sharon Stone and Michael Douglas starred in Basic Instinct. Erasure hit the top of the singles chart with Arabesque. Prince Andrew and Sarah Ferguson separated. Andrew Morton's book Diana, Her True Story, caused controversy. But what year? 1992. Round 4. Who am I? Question 7. A model. I was born in Sudan in 1977. I was raised in a small village and my name allegedly means black spotted cow in my native tongue. I was granted asylum in Britain and was spotted in 1995 by a London modelling agency. I have modelled for a range of fashion houses and I won the 1997 MTV Model of the Year Award. I am Alec Weck. Question 8. An author. I was born in Dorset in 1931. I taught briefly at Eton, but my work for MI5 and MI6 provided the subject matter for most of my novels, which document the post-World War II Cold War climate. These include Call for the Dead and Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy. I am John le Carré. And round 5. Maths. Impossipuzzles. Question 9. In an election, O'Hara and Keaton got 859 votes between them. Lavers and O'Hara got 755 together, whereas Keaton and Lavers got 650 between them. How many votes did each of the three get? O'Hara, 482, Keaton, 377, and Lavers, 273. And question 10. The serial number of my new computer looks quite an ordinary five-figure number to me, except its first and last digits are the same, said Dad. There's more than that, Dad, Mark told him. It's just three more than twice the square of its other three digits. That did make it rather special. So what was the number? 31253. 31,253. Which was your favourite round? I'm Sarah Ann, and I'll be back next time. Bye!
Some audio described TV programmes for the next week, along with radio programme highlights from Talking News Federation. Search for publications TNF Soundings to hear these directly on their website.
TNF Soundings.
Hello, this is Glenys welcoming you to your audio-described TV programmes starting Saturday, 17th of January and ending Friday, the 23rd of January. These have been written by Christine. So, starting with Saturday. Early risers have an American sitcom fest from 6:20 a.m. through to 10:50 a.m. on Channel 4, featuring episodes of Kings of Queens, Everybody Loves Raymond, Frasier and The Simpsons. Meanwhile, on BBC Two, Monty Don travels along the Rhine in his Rhineland Gardens at 8:50, followed by The Red Shoes at 9:50, a film about a young ballerina torn between two creative but possessive men. And on BBC One at 11:30, Nadia shares her generations-old recipe for chicken korma in simple spices. In the afternoon, you can choose from Rick Stein's Australia at 12 on BBC Two and Simply Raymond Blanc at 12:30 on ITV. And at 3:30, Chris Packham continues his story of how plant life turned barren rock into a vibrant green world in Earth on BBC One. Ant and Dec are back to give away the biggest cash prize in TV history in Limitless Win on ITV at 4:30, followed by Cheetah Family and Me at 6. Meanwhile, on BBC One, The Gladiators are back at 5:45, and on ITV, Graham Norton's Wheel of Fortune keeps spinning at 6, followed by The Masked Singer at 7, and startling secrets from ancient and recent history come together in Valley of the Kings at 7:30 on Channel 4. Your evening choices include Casualty at 8:30 on BBC One, followed by Waiting for the Out at 9:20. whilst over on ITV, Lee Max, the 1% Club quiz show, is at 8:30. Channel 4 then has two film options. Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning, at 8:30, and Jason Statham in The Transporter at 11:40. On to Sunday. Fans of American comedy sitcom series can get an early fix from 4:45 a.m. right through to 1 p.m. on Channel 4 with The Simpsons, King of Queens, Everybody Loves Raymond and Frasier. Meanwhile, on BBC Two at 9 a.m, My Kind of Town features the once popular seaside resort of Girvan to see how much it has changed. In the afternoon, football fans have Arsenal versus Aston Villa in the Women's FA Cup, whilst on ITV at 2:10, Tom Hanks stars in the fantasy comedy drama Big. And on BBC One at 2:15, there's another film choice, Trolls World Tour. The Gladiators are on BBC One at 3:35, followed at 4:35 by a new series, Asia, which features the richest seas on Earth. Your evening options include a trio of quiz shows on ITV, Wheel of Fortune at 5, The 1% Club at 6, and The Floor at 6:55. Meanwhile, Chris McCausland's Seeing Into the Future series continues at 6:15 on BBC Two. And over on Channel 4, you can visit The World's Most Luxurious Escapes at 6:45. This episode taking you to St Lucia, Ibiza and Lapland. The Great Pottery Throwdown is at 7:45, followed by Celebrity SAS Who Dares Wins at 9, both on Channel 4. Whilst at 8 o'clock, you have Anton Deck's Limitless Win on ITV or Call the Midwife on BBC One. At 9, you have episode 4 of The Night Manager on BBC One and mystery thriller After the Flood on ITV. And at 10, Channel 4 has a two-part documentary, Four Kings, which charts the rise of British boxers Frank Bruno, Chris Eubank, Lennox Lewis and Nigel Benn against the backdrop of racism in 1980s Britain. Your evening choices conclude with two films, Schindler's List on BBC Two at 10 and The Taking of Pelham 123 on ITV at 10:15. Now for the programmes which are on at the same time, same channel, each weekday. Channel 4 has Everybody Loves Raymond at 7:50, Frasier at 9:10, American Pickers at 11:10, Car SOS at 12:10, Find It, Fix It, Flog It at 1:10, and in the afternoon, Junior Bake Off at 5. ITV has Dickinson's Real Deal at 2 o'clock. BBC Two gives you Robson Green's Weekend Escapes at 6:30. BBC One offers Bargain Hunt at 12:15, except on Tuesday. Lost and Found at 2, except on Friday. And Animal Park at 2:30, again, except for Friday. Then it's the new regular soap slots. EastEnders at 7:30 on BBC One every weeknight except Friday. Emmerdale at 8 o'clock and Coronation Street at 8:30 on ITV. And on to Monday. BBC One offers Homes Under the Hammer at 11:30 a.m. and then it's into the evening where it's lambing season on the Fletcher's Family Farm at 7:30 p.m. At 8 o'clock, you have Jamie Oliver's Feasts for a Fiver on Channel 4, and on BBC One, the detective series Lindley continues at 8:30. Episode 2 of the mystery thriller After the Flood is on ITV, and the final episode of Lucy Worsley's Victorian Murder Club is on BBC Two, both at 9 o'clock. Then at 10, Jason Fox and his elite team of military veterans open up about men's health while taking on one of the world's toughest ultramarathons in Arctic adventure, Ultimate Survival, on Channel 4, while Mortimer and Whitehouse have gone fishing again on BBC Two. BBC One's industry series continues at 10:40, and ITV's Social Media Murders features the case of Alex Rodder at 10:45. Your evening choices conclude with Celebrity Gogglebox on Channel 4 at 11:05, Heathrow, Britain's busiest airport, on ITV at 11:35, and the late night film on BBC One at 11:40, What's Love Got to Do with It? On Tuesday, Bargain Hunt is at 7:15 a.m. today, and Robson Green's Great Escapes at 8:30 a.m., both on BBC Two. In the evening, your 8 o'clock choices are Inside the Factory with Paddy McGuinness on BBC One. This one visiting Reckitt's Medicine Factory in Nottingham. Rick Stein's Australia on BBC Two and What Not to Eat on Channel 4. At 9, you have Waterloo Road on BBC One, with another episode after the news at 10:40. ITV's 9 o'clock offering is Killer in the House, The Murder of Nicholas Billingham. And on Channel 4, 24 Hours in Police Custody investigates the epidemic of knife crime. Documentary The Secret of Me is on Channel 4 at 10. Long Lost Family is on ITV at 10:45. Digging for Britain visits the White Cliffs of Dover at 11 on BBC Two, and It'll Be All Right on the Night is on ITV at 11:45. Next, your programmes for Wednesday. 8 o'clock choices are The Traitors on BBC One, A House Through Time, Two Cities at War on BBC Two, and Kirsty and Phil's Love It or List It on Channel 4. Then at 9, you have The Traitors Uncloaked on BBC One, Digging for Britain on BBC Two, Grantchester on ITV, and Patience on Channel 4. BBC One's series Can You Keep a Secret is at 9:30, and at 10, you have One Foot in the Grave on BBC Two, and Social Media Monsters on Channel 4, followed by Gogglebox at 11. And on to Thursday. At 8 o'clock, it's The Traitors on BBC One, and on Channel 4, Lorraine Kelly continues her Norwegian odyssey, sailing through the Lofoten Islands above the Arctic Circle. Detective series Patience continues on Channel 4 at 9, while over on ITV, it's Long Lost Family. BBC One has Traitors Uncloaked, and on BBC Two, Rob and Ryan's Grand Tour concludes in Rome. At 9:30, BBC One's Black Ops series continues, and at 10, you have What We Do in the Shadows on BBC Two, and Palestine Action, The Truth Behind the Ban on Channel 4. Killer in the House, The Murder of Nicholas Billingham, is on ITV at 10:45, and your evening choices conclude with 24 Hours in Police Custody at 11 on Channel 4, and the last episode of Lucy Worsley's Victorian Murder Club series at 11:05 on BBC Two. And finally, Friday. In the afternoon, BBC One has Father Brown at 2, followed by Escape to the Country at 2:45. Amanda and Alan's Greek Job is on BBC One, and It'll Be All Right on the Night on ITV, both at 7:30. And at 8, you can choose between Monty Don's Rhineland Gardens on BBC Two and David Baddiel, Catman, on Channel 4. It's The Traitors Final at 8:30 on BBC One, followed at 9:45 by The Traitors Uncloaked, while over on Channel 4, it's Task Masterclass The End of the World at 10. Then there are two late-night film options. The Taking of Pelham 123 on ITV at 10:45 and the In-Betweeners movie on Channel 4 at 11:05. That's it for this week. We hope you find plenty of programmes to enjoy and we look forward to updating you again next week.
Hello, this is Gilly Hamilton with suggestions for your listening pleasure for the coming week, beginning with Saturday the 17th, compiled for the last time by Terry Prince. First up, it's Radio 2 at 1 p.m, where Emma Willis takes over from Zoe Ball for 2 hours of popular music. A Cold War thriller is ready to enthrall you on Radio 4 Extra at 5 p.m, with the dramatisation of The Ipcris File, in which the nameless intelligence agent is ensnared in a sinister plot to brainwash scientists. If this doesn't appeal, then wait until 6 p.m. for a complete contrast on Radio 3, with the ever-popular opera Carmen, live from New York. Romance of a Different Kind is the subject of the play at 11 p.m. on Radio 4. Dan does dating. Dan has started dating again via an app, but can he get through a date without arguing? Sunday the 18th gives us an opportunity to compare and contrast two similar programmes. At 10 a.m. on Radio 4 in the ever-popular Desert Island Discs, Lauren Laverne's guest is the actor Adil Akhtar, who talks about his career and selects his 8 discs. Later at 12 p.m. on Radio 3, Michael Berkeley welcomes actor Peter Purves to Private Passions. Many of us will remember Peter, of course, from Blue Peter and Doctor Who. Staying with programmes centred on music and words, we suggest you tune in to Radio 3 for Words and Music. Following the recent 50th anniversary of the death of Agatha Christie, Sian Thomas and Tim McKinney celebrate with readings from the musical world of the iconic crime writer. Monday suggestions begin with some programmes that are broadcast at the same time every day of the week. We begin with The Trust Shift at 11:45 Radio 4. Rachel Botsman traces decisions that shifted the nature of society. At 1:45 p.m, also on Radio 4, Human Intelligence focuses on reclusive geniuses, starting with Emily Bronte. Composer of the Week on Radio 3 at 4 p.m. is Anton Dvorak. Moving to Radio 3 at 9:45 p.m. brings us stories from the Museum of Music History, which explores forgotten objects from the museum's treasure trove of artefacts and instruments, beginning with the square piano given by Napoleon to his second wife. Finally, the book at bedtime, Radio 4, 10:45 p.m, is The Memory Police, whose duty is to ensure that to remember is to put your life in danger. When things mysteriously disappear, they must be forgotten, but some people are unable to forget. What will happen to them when the police come calling? Returning to Monday's other suggestions, may we propose An American Journey at 11 a.m. on Radio 4, in which James Naughtie crosses the USA to learn how the ideas behind the Declaration of Independence, the 250th anniversary of which falls this year, still resonate today. A comedy drama awaits us on Radio 4 at 2:15 p.m. in Disordered. Hector is making a good job of bringing up his 11-year-old son until his long-lost father reappears to complicate matters. A dramatisation of a classic novel is on Radio 4 Extra at 9 p.m. when Barchester Towers by Anthony Trollope is broadcast again. On Tuesday the 20th, we begin with the fact that we constantly read about computer hacking And in Ransom on Radio 4 at 9 a.m, Jenny Kleeman investigates what was behind the breach of data that released the names and private notes of 33,000 people who had used the Finnish National Psychotherapy Service. Was it financial gain or something more sinister? For those who might be attempting a dry January, Inside Health, Radio 4 at 9:30 a.m, looks at the science behind the new generation of alcohol-free drinks. Good news or bad? The popular broadcast for the visually impaired, In Touch, is on Radio 4 at 8:40 p.m. It ends at 9 p.m. when you can turn to Radio 4 Extra for the second episode of Barchester Towers. Wednesday the 21st begins with a suggestion that you tune in to Putin and the Apartment Bombs, a BBC podcast entitled The History Bureau, which examines the explosions that killed hundreds and threw the nation into bedlam just weeks after Putin became Prime Minister. Coincidence or something more sinister? Remember Dolly the Sheep, born through cloning? In Cloning Jack on Radio 4, 3:30 p.m, Ben Garrod explores the possibility that his beloved dog Jack, a constant companion for more than a decade, might be genetically reproduced. Ben also asks what cloning involves and whether a clone could ever replicate the bond we share with our pets. And the final part of Barchester Towers is on Radio 4 Extra at 9 p.m. We end today's suggestions on a relaxing note with Night Tracks on Radio 3 at 10 p.m, an atmospheric playlist tailored for nocturnal listening. Thursday the 22nd sees the return of one of Radio 4's most popular programmes when In Our Time is broadcast at 9 a.m. This time, Misha Glennie takes over from Melvin Bragg to present what he calls one of the crown jewels of Radio 4. 2 million listeners tune in to feed their curiosity and begin this week with an examination of the deep sea Mariana Trench and tectonic plates. This cultural life, Radio 4, 11 a.m, is also a very popular broadcast, and this week's guest, theatre and opera director Katie Mitchell, talks about her life, work and creative processes. The consummate broadcaster Claire Balding hikes up Breedon Hill in Worcestershire with the founder of an outdoor-based initiative which helps young people build confidence. Claire hears how the outdoors can transform a young person's mindset. Ramblings is on Radio 4 at 3 p.m. The play From Lagos with Love on Radio 4 Extra at 9 p.m. delves into the murky world of corporate fraud, global oil deals, offshore companies, and the development of a relationship across social and cultural divides. On to Friday the 23rd. And our suggestions begin with a programme about Scottish poet Robbie Burns and his relationship with a much older woman. In Best Friends Forever, Robert Burns and Mrs. Dunlop, Louise Welsh gets to the heart of why these two figures, so different in age and background, bonded the way they did. You'll find it on Radio 4 Extra at 10:30 a.m. or 4:30 p.m. If you're a fan of Nordic thrillers, you're in for a treat at 2:15 p.m. on Radio 4 with the play Limelight, Wolf Valley. The thriller centres on the disappearance of a young activist whose empty tent in the grounds of a powerful landowner is the starting point for the search. And finally, as you may well know, Friday night is music night. And on Radio 3 at 7:30 p.m, you can enjoy the music of Rodgers and Hammerstein, Bernstein and Andrew Lloyd Webber, among others. A short message from Terry, our compiler. As this is my last time of offering ideas for your listening entertainment, may I thank you for listening over the many past years and end, as I often do, with Classic FM's 10 PM Calm Classics to wind down the week. Happy listening.
TNS Soundings.
Hi everyone, it's Kate. Just wanted to wish you a very happy new year, and I hope you all had a wonderful Christmas and new year. I'm going to be reading you some articles today from the Express and Star, dated the 13th of January, 2026. New boss so thankful for his time in Minnesota. New Albion head coach Eric Ramsey has delivered his parting message to Minnesota United, having swapped the US for the Hawthorns. The 34-year-old Shropshire-born coach's incredible rise has seen him leave behind life in the MLS to succeed Ryan Mason at the struggling Baggies. Having worked in the game from a young age, Ramsey, who is a key coach at Manchester United under a number of managers, takes his first permanent steps into management in England with the Albion. A deal was agreed and confirmed on Sunday, with Ramsey delivering a parting message to Minnesota fans, having led them to impressive finishes in the MLS. The new Albion man said, "We're incredibly grateful for our time in Minnesota. We've made friends for life, experienced a part of the world we may never other have ever seen, and shared something truly special as a family. Two seasons have flown by, but I'll look back with nothing but fond memories and a real pride in what we achieved together. I've had the privilege of working with an outstanding staff and talented group of players who've been honest, professional and committed, all backed by the tremendous support of the fan base. Thank you to everyone who's made us feel so welcome from the very beginning. Will we be lifelong supporters of Minnesota United, and we'll always remember everything Minnesota has given us. The club's chief soccer officer and supporting director, Khalid El Ahmed, also hailed Ramsey and explained how the club supported his professional ambitions as he makes the move back to England. El Ahmed, who first tried to lure Ramsey to League One Barnsley during his time at the club, said, "Eric was instrumental in shaping a team that reflects the values of our club and our community. Alongside Dennis Lawrence and his staff, he helped build a strong football environment grounded in hard work, clarity and accountability. Their leadership set us up well for what's ahead, and we're grateful for everything that Eric contributed during his time here at Minnesota United. From day one, we've supported Eric's professional ambitions and we wish him nothing but success as he takes on his next opportunity. We're confident in the foundations in place and will continue to build with purpose and continuity moving forward." And this article is supported by a photograph of Eric Ramsey wearing a black puffer jacket and a black Adidas woolly hat. He looks like he's at the side of the sort of football pitch. Man's jailed for buying disinfectant for gunman. A man who helped out a gunman by purchasing disinfectant to clean a car used in West Bromwich shooting has been jailed for 4 years. Naveed Hussain, aged 23, of Ida Road, West Bromwich, assisted Adian Hussain, who fired shots towards a white Volkswagen Golf at the junction of High Street and Trinity Way on the 1st of May last year, resulting in the victim suffering head, neck and chest pellet wounds. On Friday, at Wolverhampton Crown Court, a trial of issue hearing was held ahead of Naveed Hussain being sentenced. He had previously admitted an offence of assisting an offender in relation to the case, but claimed that while he did purchase the cleaning solutions, he had no idea why his co-defendant, Adian Hussain, aged 22, wanted it. Judge Jonathan Gosling told the hearing it was limited issue, saying, "I agree with the analysis of the prosecution. The level of criminality is very serious. It would have been impossible for the principal offender to carry it out without the assistance of this defendant. He would not have been able to execute this carefully organised plan." Prosecution barrister Miss Sophie Murray, told the court that Naveed Hussain had been in contact with the shooter before and after the incident and had dropped him off in a nearby street, and that the disinfectant was used to forensically clean the black car used in the drive-by attack. She said he phoned the co-defendant while he was in the store, and that the attempt to cover up their actions involved efforts to switch number plates and concealing the gun. Hussain must also forfeit his phone and pay a victim surcharge. Gunman Adyan Hussain was jailed for nearly 11 years after admitting possession of a firearm with intent to endanger life. And this article is being supported by a photograph of both perpetrators, Naveed Hussain, who was given 4 years, and the gunman Adyan Hussain, who got nearly 11. £1 million war chest to tackle homelessness. A £1 million war chest has been announced to tackle homelessness across the region. West Midlands Mayor Richard Parker said money from the Rough Sleeping Prevention and Recovery Grant Programme will provide support for 700 people sleeping rough at risk of losing their home or living in temporary and insecure housing. A total of 16 projects will be funded by the grant, and Mr Parker visited one of them, Move On, which is run by Citizen from the Gateway Housing Scheme in Coventry, which is helping homeless people turn their lives around. Other projects supported by the region's RSPARG funding included targeted help for the care leavers and women, as well as work with landlords and housing associations to identify tenants at risk before they reach the point of homelessness. Steve, 59, from Coventry, told the mayor how he arrived at the Gateway after being evicted from a shared house. With support from Citizen, he's now overcome personal challenges and is now living independently in his own flat. He's also the chairman of Gateway Link, which is a group of current and former Gateway residents who run social activities and use their skills to support each other, from decorating and DIY to helping with removals when they move into their own homes. He said, "Before I came to the Gateway, I was in shared accommodation surrounded by people drinking and taking drugs, and I'd become a product of my own environment. But now I've got a far superior support network than I've ever had in my life, thanks to the Gateway. Helping others through the Gateway Link has given me a sense of purpose, direction and satisfaction in my own life." Mr. Parker said, "Hearing Steve's story left me in no doubt about the devastating impact that being homeless can have on someone's life and how safe and secure homes underpin everything. Without it, health, confidence and opportunity can quickly unravel. And that's why I'm using this funding to give more people like him and others I've met at the Gateway the hope they need to get themselves back on their feet." And this article is supported by a photograph of Mayor Richard Parker with Steve. And they're standing together side by side, and Steve is holding Mayor Parker's hand in a very sort of grateful, thankful way. Council congratulated for leading the way on pothole repairs. A Black Country borough has been congratulated by Labour after scoring among the best in the country in the new traffic light national rating system. Samwell was rated green in the new traffic light rating system published by the government ahead of the National Pothole Day on January the 15th. The new ratings, the first of their kind, grade local authorities in England red, amber or green based on the current road conditions and how effectively they're spending their share of £30 million of government funding to fix potholes and invest in long-term measures to maintain roads. Samwell was rated green and it was able to demonstrate the council was following best practice, such as investing in more long-term preventative measures rather than just patching up potholes, whilst almost maintaining good road conditions and investing significantly in improving local roads. Almost every authority in the West Midlands, bar Samwell, Coventry and Worcestershire, was rated amber. Councillor Kerry Carmichael, leader of Samwell Council, said, "We're proud that Samwell is recognised nationally for the outstanding condition of its roads, being the second biggest borough within the West Midlands region. Not only were we one of the top performers in the country for overall road condition, but we also are leading the way in the speed, quality and reliability of our pothole repairs. We're very pleased to achieve a green rating on the new interactive map. This achievement reflects years of consistent investment, smart planning and a commitment to doing things the right way for our residents, businesses and everyone using Sandwells Roads. We deliver all of this while remaining highly efficient and keeping the cost per mile exceptionally low. Through the use of innovative technology, data-led maintenance and forward-thinking repair methods, we're able to make every pound go further. Well-maintained roads and pavements are important for people's safety, for their health by encouraging cycling and walking, and for connecting residents to jobs, education and local services. Our approach to road maintenance exemplifies our commitment to be caring council that gets things done on the issues that matter to our residents. Labour's local road minister, Simon Lightwood, is due to visit Sandwell this week to mark National Pothole Day and see firsthand how the borough is tackling preventative maintenance. Transport Secretary Heidi Alexander said, "For too long, drivers in the West Midlands have paid the price because our roads were left to deteriorate. I've heard time again their frustration on footing the bill because they've hit a pothole. Money should never have had to spend in the first place. We've put our money where our mouth is, increased the funding in the West Midlands with £800 million to fix roads and given them the long-term certainty that they've been asking for." And this article is supported by some workers from Sandwell Council who are carrying out road maintenance repair. We've got three gentlemen in their sort of orange Hy-Vees, one standing there with a wheelbarrow that looks like perhaps he's poured the tarmac on. You've got another gentleman who's there just spreading it out all evenly. And you've got a third gentleman at the back who looks like he's loading up another wheelbarrow full of tarmac. Driver who reached 80 miles an hour in street racing spot sentenced. Man is the 14th motorist to get suspended jail term for breaching the order within the borough. A driver who raced others along roads in Smethwick has become the 14th person prosecuted by Sandwell Council for breaching the Black Countrywide Street Racing Injunction Order. Oscar Arif, aged 22, of Kimberley Way, Stafford, admitted breaching the injunction. He received a 28-day prison sentence, suspended for 12 months on condition that he abides by the injunction, and he was ordered to pay £2,534.30 in court costs. Arif was arrested in Holly Lane, Smethwick, in the early hours of 16th of November 2025 after the police observed him racing other cars from the M6 Junction 7 roundabout in Great Bar to Kenrick Way in West Bromwich. Police recorded a group of drivers, including Arif, reaching speeds of at least 90 miles an hour along the motorway, undertaking cars and showing generally poor standards of driving. They recorded him racing at speeds of at least 80 miles an hour along Kenrick Way, which is a 40 miles an hour limit. Spectators were watching at the roadside and Arif was seen to undertake another vehicle near to where the spectators were stood. He was sentenced at Birmingham High Court on December the 12th and is the 14th driver to have received a suspended prison sentence for breaching the Black Countrywide order within Sandwell. 11 of those taken to court in Sandwell were caught racing along Kendrick Way. Councillor Suzanne Hartwell, Sandwell Council's deputy leader, said, "The latest court result sends a further message to street racers or car cruisers that this dangerous and antisocial behaviour will not be tolerated. The manner of this driving and the fact spectators were so close is really worrying. As we have tragically seen before in Sandwell, street racing puts people's lives at risk and can lead to devastating tragedies."
Albion Match Report. Managerless West Bromwich Albion ended a run of 10 successive away defeats as they came from behind to win their FA Cup third round tie at Championship rivals Swansea City on penalties. After a tepid goalless first half in regular time, the game burst into life as Gsing Eom put the Swans ahead with a fine curling effort 3 minutes after the restart, only for Josh Madger to scramble the baggies level 5 minutes later. Swansea missed several chances as the match entered extra time, with Malik Yakule hitting the post before Jed Wallace's powerful first-time hit gave West Brom the lead. But another swift reply saw Zidane Inoussa score his first goal for the Swans to take the game to a shootout. The first 10 penalties were all scored. Ben Cabano, Jay Fulton, Ethan Galbraith, Cameron Burgess and Inoussa for Swansea. Ornhego, Isaac Price, Callum Stiles, Carlin Grant and Wallace for West Brom. The three misses came at the sudden death stage, with Swansea's Bobby Wales seeing his spot kick saved by Josh Griffiths before he was given a reprieve when Chris Metham blazed over. But after Yakule followed suit by clearing the bar, Ollie Bostock blasted his penalty into the top left corner to take the Baggies through to the fourth round. They will discover their opponents when the draw is made on Monday evening. Morrison, interim manager, said, "This was a repeat of a Leach fixture here only 10 days ago. Jay Fulton's second half strike gave the Swans a 1-0 win, and it was far more memorable. A week and a half is a long time in football. In that time, West Brom had sacked head coach Ryan Mason and midfielder James Morrison back in charge temporarily. Having fulfilled the same role following Tony Mowbray's dismissal last season, Morrison was this time tasked with ensuring his side avoided an 11th successive away loss for the first time since the 1926-27 campaign. Both he and his Swansea counterpart, Vitor Matos, named strong lineups, but this was a slow burner. A lack of intensity on the pitch reflected the patchy crowd at the Swansea.com stadium, and it took half an hour for Iom to register the game's first shot on target. There were other first-half efforts which went fairly close. Daryl DK's strike for West Brom, San Vipotnik glancing wide for the Swans, but this looked like a match that neither club particularly wanted. Luckily, the second half was a different story. Whereas the first period produced only two shots on target, the opening 10 minutes after the interval yielded twice as many, including two goals. Iom opened the scoring with a flourish, receiving the ball just inside the penalty area, shifting it to his right foot and bending a fabulous finish into the top far corner. West Brom equalised 5 minutes later as Swansea failed to deal with Stiles' corner and Madger bundled in from close range. Malcolm Widdell almost restored Swansea's lead swiftly and in spectacular style, but his sweetly struck overhead kick was straight at Baggies goalkeeper Griffiths. The Swans squandered further opportunities in normal time and extra time, most notably with Yakule hitting the base of the post. That looked costly when Wallace whipped in a confident finish from Bostock's low cross, but Inoussa converted Josh Key's cutback to take the game to penalties. The first 10 spot kicks were scored, and after Yakule's miss, it was left to West Brom's academy product, Bostock, to win the game for his team.
TNF Soundings.
I'm Bob Baker.
And I'm Jill Hardiker.
And together we are Sound and Vision,
bringing you the best information, technology and interviews for the visually impaired and those supporting them.
Does being visually impaired deter you from going on holiday because you don't think you're going to get the full experience?
Maybe you're apprehensive about travelling alone, but there are places in the world that you would love to visit.
Well, the good news is that there are companies out there that can help you with this. And Seeable Holidays is one of them.
We chatted to Daniel and Lucy from Seeable Holidays, and in this first piece, they introduce themselves and explain about Seeable.
My name is Daniel. My role at Seeable is sales and client support. What that essentially means is from that very first moment that you pick up the phone or drop us an email, I am the first point of call right the way through until hopefully I'm calling you to ask if you would be so kind as to write us a review on how amazing your holiday was. So essentially, I am here to support you in any way, shape or form that I can, whether that's through the booking process or anything to do with your holidays. I'm here to help, basically.
My name is Lucy Ashton and I've worked for Seeable Holidays since 2019. And I work in business development at Seeable. And I also work as a tour leader on a lot of our group tours as well. And I'm the holiday organiser for all of our group tours and our tailored holidays as well. So I'm essentially the person that helps you decide where to go, what to do on your holiday. And I work very closely with our local guides as well to help plan itineraries and ensure that you have the best holiday.
As both Daniel and Lucy are visually impaired, they are well placed to understand your needs when you're booking a holiday. Here they tell us about their backstories.
I was diagnosed with a genetic visual impairment at the age of 8. And for a long time, I wasn't actively involved in the visually impaired community. And I often wondered where I truly belonged. But that changed when I became a member of a charity called Victor at the age of 16. And over the years, I learned about the holidays that they offer, which were specifically designed for visually impaired individuals. So 11 years ago now, at the age of 19, a Sicily trip was advertised in partnership with Seeable Holidays, and this caught my attention. So signing up and not knowing what to expect was a moment of bravery that profoundly changed my life. The holiday in Sicily taught me so much about myself and others within the VI community. I discovered that being visually impaired can be empowering and that we can fully enjoy experiences often associated with sighted individuals. The local guides provided incredible support when needed, and the fact that everything from the hotel to each restaurant was meticulously planned and considered made the holiday truly exceptional. I am now incredibly proud to be part of the Seeable Holidays team. This allows me to apply my personal experience, moving from being a customer to working behind the scenes. My insights and understanding of living with a visual impairment are invaluable in ensuring that we continue to make holidays truly accessible for everyone.
I've been registered partially sighted as a teenager, and then in my mid-20s, I was registered severely sighted. But I've worked in construction for 25 years. And then due to the deterioration in my eyesight, I decided that I needed a career change. And then 18 months ago, I stopped working to focus on that. And I found an internship through the Thomas Bockington Trust with Seeable Holidays, which I applied for. The main reason being, I love the positivity around being able to help people on holiday.
Lucy went on to explain about how Seeable started, their mission, and how they create their holidays.
So for over a decade, Seeable has been instrumental in creating opportunities and support for the visually impaired community. Seeable began with our founder, Damiano. He studied in London on an accelerator programme for young entrepreneurs. And he was inspired by his father's charitable work. And upon research, he found that holidays for the visually impaired were not catered for, and he wanted to change this. And this is where Seeable Holidays, a non-profit social enterprise, was born. Our mission is clear and powerful: to provide accessible holidays. We provide amazing and inclusive trips that can improve your well-being with our local trained assistants so you can enjoy a stress-free holiday. But what does that mission look like in action? What does Seeable Holidays actually do? We believe that everyone deserves the joy, relaxation and personal growth that comes from experiencing new places and adventures. For individuals with visual impairments, the prospect of planning and navigating a holiday can often be fraught with challenges. But that's where Seeable steps in. So every single day, we are dedicated to creating amazing and inclusive holidays that truly cater to the unique needs of our travellers. Our approach to accessibility considers factors beyond physical infrastructure to create truly inclusive environments. It's about creating a space where individuals feel supported, confident, and empowered to fully enjoy their time away.
So what type of holidays do Seeable offer? And what destinations can you go to?
We offer three main types of holiday. We offer group holidays, tailored holidays, and charity holidays. For our group holidays, you choose your destination, and then how long you go for and when you go, the itinerary and the price are set. With a group holiday, you obviously holiday with other people with visual impairments. The benefits of that are obviously you have the shared experiences and that you make lifelong friendships, and the social element of a group holiday is the main benefit. With a tailored holiday, you could go by yourself, with a friend, with your partner, with a family, with a group of friends. A tailored holiday is very much a bespoke holiday personalised to you. So you would choose your destination, how long you would like to go for, when you would like to go. And then we would give you a list of activities that you can choose for your itinerary. And then you would personalise that to your specific needs and requirements. And then we also offer charity holidays where we work closely with quite a few national charities on group holidays. Obviously, the benefit of holidaying with your charity is you still have the comfort blanket of going on holiday with people that you know. So they kind of all have their own different perks. It's just what specifically works best for you. With all of our holidays, you'll have a local train sighted guide. So whichever destination you choose, we have a local train sighted guide that is available for you for up to 10 hours a day, normally from breakfast into your evening meal. And we tap into their extensive knowledge of their hometowns and cities, and they help us plan our itineraries and make sure everything's accessible.
Our commitment to your comfort and enjoyment begins from the moment you arrive and continues until you depart. All of our local guides, UK tour leaders and sighted guides undergo comprehensive visual awareness training provided by us. And this ensures that our holidays maintain a high standard of guiding and that you receive excellent service throughout your trip. In each of our destinations, we carefully curated a list of fun activities and excursions, thoughtfully selected and tested by our visually impaired travellers who have participated in our training holidays. We offer a rich variety of sensory experiences, tactile tours, and exciting and unique excursions, whether that be a tactile tour of the Vatican in Rome, cooking classes in Southeast Asia, vineyard tours in Italy, and we've got a huge array of destinations.
We currently offer four UK destinations, which are London, Edinburgh, Aviemore in the Scottish Highlands, and then our island trip. Long haul wise, we've been to Panama, Ecuador, we've been to Eswatini, Vietnam, and then we have quite a lot of European trips that we do. Our founder is Sicilian, so we have quite a lot of Italian destinations. We go to Sicily, we go to Rome, we go to Florence and Pisa, we go to Naples, we have an Italian ski trip, we have a Northern Italy trip, we go to Berlin, we go to Stockholm, we go to Romania, we've also been to Euro Disney Paris. So yeah, we have a wide range of variety and we're always looking to add new destinations year on year as we grow as a business.
When you've booked and paid for a holiday, you need to know that your money is secure. So we asked about this.
We're with the Travel Trust Association. So what happens is when somebody pays for their holiday, it goes into a trust fund. We can't actually access that money until they return from their holiday.
Yeah, 100% financial protection it is.
Yeah.
Seeable offers several levels of assistance from your front door or from the airport, as Lucy explains.
Typically, the assistance begins from the minute you arrive to the minute you depart, so when you arrive at your destination. But we can offer a service where on some of our group holidays, Ecuador, the long-haul holidays, the Seeable staff actually meet you at the airport, meet you at the special assistance area of the airport. Or we do have some customers want that door-to-door service. We can also incorporate that in as well and help arrange a service that would pick you up from your home, take you to the airport, and the same for going home as well. So if that is your requirement, we can adapt to that as well. The group trips, you know, that for people that want to socialise and be around other people and friends and travel independently, but as a group, if that makes sense. And then the tailor-made holidays are essentially that. They're purely bespoke, tailored to you. You pick the destination activities and based on your level of needs, we can tailor that to you. People often ask me when they go on the group trips, you know, what's the age of the other people going? And it really is a wide spectrum. There's no one answer, but I often say to people, if you are going on a group trip to Ecuador, for example, you all already have something in common, is that, you know, you're the type of person that wants to be out there and traveling the world and kind of are brave enough to go and meet a group of strangers and go on a, you know, trip of a lifetime. So I think that's why our trips work so well, because it's the personalities of the people and the encouragement from each other. Really, age just doesn't really come into it when we do our trips. Anyone 18 plus is welcome on our group holidays, absolutely.
There's lots of ways to find out about Seeable on social media, with content on many platforms, including Instagram, YouTube and Facebook.
So quite active on social media. On our website, we've got lots of testimonials from customers that have travelled with us. We've got lots of reviews on our Facebook. We share videos of the team and different things on our Instagram as well. So there's lots of things out there. There's a few videos on YouTube as well of Seeable Holidays. There's kind of a lot out there we like to share about all of our customers' experiences. But the main thing at the minute, if people are interested, we advise them to give us a call. We love a chat at Seeable, so call and we can talk through the different destinations and just simply about what we offer as well.
If you'd like to find out more about Seeable, their website is seeable.co.uk, which is seeable.co.uk. Their email address is info@seeable.co.uk, which is info@seeable.co.uk. Or as Lucy says, they love a chat at Seeable. So if you'd like to give them a ring, their number is 0203 375 6947. Or you can write to them at 35 Kingsland Road, Shoreditch, London. And the postcode is Echo 28 Alpha Alpha.
There are a number of other companies offering travel opportunities for the visually impaired. These include Limitless Travel, based in Birmingham, and their website is golimitlesstravel.org. And their phone number is 0800 711 7112. Or another company is Travelize at HF Holidays, and they're based in Leeds, and their website is info@hfholidays.co.uk, and their number is 020 3974 8865.
We'd like to thank Daniel and Lucy for their insight and information about Seeable and their holidays for the visually impaired.
Maybe it's inspired you to travel to places you might never have thought of going before. Or maybe you just fancy a short break. We hope that what you've heard has helped give you confidence to get out there and travel.
You've been listening to Sound and Vision with Bob and Jill. Wishing you all the best. Until the next time, it's goodbye from the both of us.
TNF Soundings.
Happy New Year to you all. I hope you enjoyed the Christmas and New Year period and managed to cope with all the snow as well afterwards. It was a bit of a challenge getting the Express and Star articles this time, because Sue, who picks the articles normally, had a problem with her Express and Star being delivered during the snow. So I've had to pick some of the articles as well this time to cover for her. So I'd like to thank all of our readers who've volunteered to read the Express and Star articles for us. They were James, Alison, Lauren, Sarbjit, Jenny and Kate. And thanks to Sarah Ann for doing the quiz. She's back once again with us. And of course to Sue for picking most of the articles that everyone's read. To Ray for putting everything together. And Tony and Gavin doing all the distribution on the USB sticks. Now, I do hope you all managed to listen to the Christmas special edition, which was at the end of the edition before Christmas. If you didn't, please let us know, and we'd love to know what you thought of the Christmas special so that we can feed that into what we do next year. Bye for now, everyone. Have a lovely week.
Thanks, Pam. And you leave me very little to say here, and there isn't much time for me to say much in any case. But a thank you to you and everyone who helped to make the Christmas special the special thing that it was. Don't forget that you can hear the podcast of the Talking News on our page within SVI's website, and you can get in touch with us. Details coming up soon. Following me, the latest edition of In Touch. But for now, I have to sign off. Do get in touch with us, though, if you want to feedback or contribute, have any suggestions as to what we might do better. But for now, I have to sign off. Bye-bye for now, and we'll be back with you next week.
To use our talk phone service to listen to Sandwell Talking News or leave us a message, phone 0121 699 6696. If you are using a landline in the 0121 area, then just dial 699 6696.